welcome to Raising a Pro. I'm Annie Apple, journalist and NFL mom to my son, Eli Apple. When it comes to football, let's face it, injuries are a part of the game. But the 2020 season has seen its fair share, really unfair share, of some major and frequent injuries. For example, Broncos Von Miller's ankle injury ended his season. Odell Beckham Jr. tore his ACL and is out for the remainder of the season. And recently, Joey Burrow's devastating knee injury, where he tore his ACL and MCL, will also end his season. 2020 has really been rough. But today, I'm glad to have an expert in the house. Tanya Johnson, mom of NFL's own New York Football Giants star running back Saquon Barkley. She joins us today to talk about how Saquon is doing since tearing his ACL in September of this year and is out for the season as well. Saquon Barkley, as you remember, was picked second overall by the New York Giants in the 2018 NFL Draft, and he has been a star. Welcome the woman who birthed and nurtured that star, Tanya Johnson. I just want to say, Tanya's skin is just glowing this morning. It is like super, super glowing. You look beautiful.
Thank you.
And I just want to go on record and say that Tanya owes me dinner.
I do.
A fat girl like me never forgets, okay?
We will get that done.
So how are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm doing well. You know, West Coast living is definitely different, especially in the middle of a pandemic. So everything's kind of different. But I'm so glad you're able to be here, because before we get into Saquon's story and his journey, I really want to talk to you about injury this year, because it seems like we've had an enormous amount of guys getting injured recently with Joey Burrow with the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, he literally tore his knee apart. So I just wanted to kind of, because you're the expert in the room, on what it's like and what his mom, Robin, is going through right now. Because Saquon was injured on September the 20th in Chicago during the game. He tore his ACL in his knee, and November 20th, he underwent surgery. First of all, take us back to September 20th. What was that like for you when you saw that he got hurt?
It was devastating. I mean, we were sitting there watching a game because obviously we was home. And, you know, I'm like, is he hurt? And then I get on the phone and I'm calling everybody. I'm calling his agent. I'm calling his manager. And I'm like, get me some information on my son. Now, what is going on? And it was just heartbreaking.
Did you say it that politely?
No, I did not. No, I did not. I'm like, I want answers now, but you know, with a little more bass into it, and maybe
a little more Bronx.
But, you know, and it's like, I'm getting a flight. I need a flight. Give me a flight. Somebody give me a flight. And I'm like, give me my phone. I need to make a flight. It was heartbreaking, you know. And you sit there waiting. You know what I mean? To find out what's going on. You're waiting to know, you know, how bad it is. And you know that at the end of the day, they're athletes, you know what I mean? So they do, you know, more or less a performance, but they are also human beings and they're young, you know, but so much can't really display how they really feeling. So you just gotta like, you know, you're like, oh, you just wish you could just beat it. It's like a bear with a cup, you know what I mean? You just want to run out and protect your child. And especially if you're not there, you know, and it's like, oh gosh. But for the most part, I got a phone call once he went inside. Once they took him inside, you know, he called me and I'm like, what do you need from me? You need me there? You need us there now? What's going on? You know, and I'm like, they're like, no, we're bringing him back. I'm like, okay, let me know when he's back. You know, and we went right to his house and waited. And he's about an hour and 20 minutes from us. First thing we did, left out the house, ran in, just waited. And I mean, it's heartbreaking, you know what I mean? Because you don't really know, especially with Saquon, football is like, he's been playing football since he was five. To have something that may can actually like take your dream away from you, you just don't, you know, you up in the air, you really don't know. You know what I mean? And then you got to find out like how bad it is. And is it something you can come back from? It's heartbreaking.
And like you said, people don't understand, number one, they're human. And it's not just the physical pain, but it's also the psychological pain, right? It's the mental, because in that moment, you are thinking, wow, what if I can't do what I've done since I was five years old again, right? So as a mom, you're concerned about the physical injury, but you're also trying to keep his spirits up. And How are you able to do that? Like, because we mom, we can look at our sons, even if they won't tell us, we know how they're feeling. So how were you able to kind of get to him and kind of encourage him in that moment?
I feel that doing that, you have to be there physically. You have to be there mentally.
Yeah.
You know, we're their mothers, but we're also their doctors, the nurse, the psychiatrist.
Come on, tell it.
You know what I mean? You're the one who has to, I mean, everybody, you know, give their empathy. Everybody is, you know, sending their prayers, but the ones that it really matters the most from is your parents. You know what I mean? And when you know that you have them in your corner, and that's the only thing we really can do is be in your corner and be there for them. And just give them words of encouragement. Pray with them. Let them know that it's going to be okay no matter what the outcome, no matter what it is. It's going to be okay. Everything in life has a setback. You know what I mean? And you'll get setback, but sometimes you get setback for a greater journey.
Exactly. And I think what I love about being a mom of is like, allowing, giving them that safe space to, if they need to cry, if they need to really dig into their emotions, they can, and they know that that's a safe space.
Especially if, you know, when they get to you and they're around you, you know, that safe haven, they can let loose. You know, they got the shoulder to cry on. If they want to cry, they can shed their tears and don't be frowned upon. Feel they being frowned upon for, oh my gosh, you're a grown man and you're crying, or you're this athlete who take these injuries and you have the nerve to cry. You know, you take all of these bumps and bruises and they can cry. Let them cry. It's nothing wrong with a grown man crying. And at the end of the day, they're not grown men. You know, they're under 40. They're not grown men.
So once you found out how bad it was, so as a mom now, you're just getting ready for the next step. Okay, when is surgery? What are we doing? What is rehab looking at? You know, you just kind of push things forward. How was that, like, getting ready for surgery?
I mean, it was all up to when are you doing this? How are you doing this? Who do you want to choose? Everything, you know, we left it in his corner. You know, it's his decisions, and all we can do is just be there. We're there. When are you ready? When we're getting on our flight? Where are we going? Who are we going to? You know what I mean?
See, moms, we would ask all the questions, right? Because it seemed like men don't sometimes focus on the details. I'm like, okay, no. What are we doing? What is 10 steps? What's step number one, number two? So that way I'm able to keep everybody accountable on what steps we're
right,
on now.
You know, right. You have to, you got to be prepared. You got to know these things.
Why did it take so long from when he was injured to when he had the surgery?
His body, well, his legs, it started doing healing a little bit more on its own. So they said the cleaner it was, the easier it'll be for them to go in and out. So once they seen that, you know, it started progressing a little bit on its own, they're like, okay, we're going to hold off.
Isn't the body amazing, though, that it just starts to heal itself? That is so cool.
It is. So that's what they wanted to do. They said, let's wait. Everything is looking good. You know, it wasn't, the doctor felt that it wasn't a rush into because of, you know, the way things was progressing. So it was clean cut. He was happy with his work. He was happy, you know, what was done. And that's why it took so long.
Well, thank God. That makes me very, 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 very happy. What advice? Because I know Robin, she's amazing. Joe Burrow's mom. But this has to be such a tough time for them. So if you could give advice to her and all the other dozens of guys who suffer major injury this season, what advice do you have for those moms?
Just be patient. Be patient with your boys because, you know, sometimes we can become overbearing parents, you know what I mean? And, you know, we nitpick, we just feel that it's what I say. And again, you can't say it's what I say. It's their body. It's their healing process. The only thing we're going to really do is be there for them. So that's all you should be able to allow. Be there for them, you know, be their ear, be their shoulder. And just be that comfort zone for them. That's it. And just be patient. Listen to what they have to say. Listen to their feelings and work it from there.
And like you said, you know, sometimes setbacks is for a greater thing, for a greater journey. Right.
I believe everything happens for a reason. You know, sometimes we don't look at it like that. And I'm 49. I had to learn the hard way, but things happen for a reason. You know, some outcomes may look like it's bad. But again, that's just another journey till you get to that final journey.
Yeah, because I always say that God is more interested in our growth than our comfort.
We just want to be comfortable. He just wants us to grow into the person he knew we were before we came. Do you know what I mean? Exactly. So it's always like you just have to take that. Don't read a bunch of stuff because the people on the outside don't know what's happening. You know what I mean? That's another one.
Absolutely.
Let's take it back to the beginning. Saquon, his career so far is just amazing. But you said he started playing football when he was 5 years old. How did that happen? He was just a little baby.
He was. Well, Saquon was used to look at football with my husband on Sundays in New York, you know, and would sit there and look at football with him.
He was a Jets fan. Yeah. I read. Mm-hmm.
He was a Jets fan. Poor baby. And my oldest son was a Giants fan. So, and he sat there and he, you know, he looked at football, and he always used to be like, and this was at around like 3, I want to do that. So when we was out here, he showed interest again in football. My husband took him to a little league, signed him up. He played flag football from there, and then there was a breaking point until we actually moved to Whitehall Copley. And when we got to Copley, we seen this football field and see these little kids playing. So my husband was like, I'm going to take him and I'm going to sign him up there. And he did. He took him. He signed him up. And that was hockey. It was called Hockey League, Little League. And he started from there.
And he just loved it. He took to it.
Yes, he did. I remember my husband coming home and he's like, you got to see this kid. You have to see this kid. And I'm like, oh, wow. He said, he knocked the coach over, you know? And I was like, when he was hitting the pads and stuff. And I mean, I was more like the mom at home. I'm at work. My husband worked, but he did the football stuff with, you know, with Saquon. And I was I'm home from work. I'm cooking a dinner, you know, washing the clothes, getting the house together. And then I just always make sure I gave them the advice.
You mean your other job from your other job?
Right.
You know, people don't understand. Mom's work never stop. No, okay. Never. We work from out of the home to in the home.
Mm-hmm. It took a while because I'm not a sports person. You know what I mean? So I just, when I sat down and look at TV, it was finally when everybody went to bed, you know, and then I look at my Lifetime movies, you know, and then from there, he had a point when he got into middle school, he had a point wherein it, you know, he just like, it's not working out for him. And he also had this
really
thing where he was, yeah.
What was it?
I don't know if it was. He wanted to be one place, and it takes, you know how they say, I'll use a street term, it's levels to this.
Levels to this. Hours to this. Mm-hmm. You have time to do nothing else but football. Uh-huh. By the time football practice is ready, it's time for homework and bed.
Right. And he just, you know, he wanted to be up. And, you know, you had to go from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to get to 10. You know, and then he had a moment of he did not grow. He was like stunt with growth, and he thought he was always.
I can relate.
Yeah,
I'm 5'1". I can relate. I'm waiting for my growth spurt to happen, and I'm 46, so I can relate.
He just, you know, he's like, oh, I'm not gonna grow, and then it's like, I don't know. One day we looked at him like, wow. He just said, boop. Like, okay, you grew. And then he got into high school and just went and worked from there, you know.
My God, he went off in high school. I mean, he just was the man at Whitehall. It was at Whitehall High School. So let's talk about his recruiting. So he's in high school and he's killing it. But he also ran track.
He did.
He also played basketball.
He did.
So he did like 3 different sports. How did he manage all that?
I think he had to keep busy. Because, you know, when one thing was done, he went to another. And when that one was done, he went to another. But it all played the step in the bigger picture for football. He also wrestled when he was in middle school.
Eli tried wrestling and hated it. But I was like, no, you can't quit. You got to finish it out. Hated wrestling.
He loved wrestling. And I think really? It was more or less like my husband with wrestling told him that you can go but so far in wrestling. But he, the coaches was upset when he stopped wrestling because I'm not sure if they could have went to state champion. Like, he was that good in wrestling.
Wow. And
so they was upset when he left off the team. So he not to do a little bit of it all.
Now, and he also loved boxing because your husband kind of got him into that. And his uncle, who also boxed.
Yes.
But he didn't want to pursue that.
No, not at this time. It's still not off the table.
Wow. Okay. Watch out, Mike Tyson.
I think that's with all the boys. It's not off the table. You know, I mean, I'm like, not so much of a fan of that one either. You know, I don't think I want to sit there watching you get hitting your head. And
No. Running back is enough. So tell us about his high school recruiting. What made Penn State the right choice for him?
Well, when Coach Franklin came, he really came. Like, I will say he came on his A game. And I would say it like that. He did. He really did. You know, again, we left that ultimately up to Saquon of what school, like, you know, you would choose, because we're not there. We're not going to be attending that school. We're not going to be in them classrooms. We're not going to be on that football field. So you have to choose a school that you feel that is right for you, a school that you feel you'll fit in. You know, like I said, all we can do is be supportive. You know what I mean? That's like I say, what if you go get a job, you go and get that job that you think you like, you know what I mean? And something that's for you, not for us, because it's not us that's going to be there. You know what I mean? So we left that decision up to him, and he did commit to Rutgers. Like I said, Penn State really came hard. So really two schools. He had other schools that was interested in him, but the two main schools was Rutgers and Penn State. And I just think that once Penn State came, he just felt that would have been a better fit for him.
I know we played, you know, when Eli was at Ohio State, we did play Penn State. We went out there for that nighttime game in 2014. And I was like, does Penn State have an engineering school? Because it's like one row out of town. We literally was stuck there till like 3 a.m. because it's only one row that leads out.
Right.
Why?
Right. I don't know. I mean, it was when we went to the Penn State games, and we went to every game, and we never stood up there. Now, mind you, we live in Pennsylvania, but Penn State is about 3.5 hours from us. So it was like we're going on a road trip every time we went to the game, you know, because then, especially for the night ones, you got out of there late. And by the time you did, yes. You know, it was everybody's leaving at the same time. It was
One road out of town.
One road. And it was so much. But like I said, it was like going on a road trip every time we went to the games. And we went to every game, but we always came home.
But his sophomore season at Penn State, he was named the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year. I mean, he was dynamite to watch. And I know because I've seen him in college. You know, we played against you guys. We always won, but that's not the point. Well, it kind of is. But Saquon, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But I mean, Saquon was, he runs with this fearlessness, right? You know, and I'm Dawn Elliott, Ezekiel Elliott's mom and our best friend. So I've seen Ezekiel over the years do his thing. And so at this level, are you concerned about, you know, with the life of a running back, the injury? Was that ever a concern for you? Or you were just like, he loves doing this. Let's go ahead and do it.
No, you're always concerned with injuries. I know for myself as being a mother, you know, you just sit there like when he would jump over someone. It's like, don't do that.
I know. You know. Let me tell you, they're not even my kids. And every time somebody hurt or somebody, I'm like, I feel like their mom instantly. I'm like, don't do that.
Yes. You know, so you always worry about injuries. You're like, every game, you know what I mean? You pray.
But do you tell him that, though? Do you be like, Saquon, can you not do that?
I try, you know what I mean? And so I just got this thing that if I'm not there, I text Saquon every time before a game. I try to speak to him, but I also give him a text, you know what I mean? And you try to say, don't do this and don't do that. So I just say, stay safe. Be safe on that field. You know, that's and he kind of understand, he kind of know what that mean, but that doesn't mean he's going to listen.
Then he goes out there and hurdles somebody. That's what he needs. So instead of four hurdles, mom only hurdled him three times.
With Saquon, it's like my husband says, it's he put that helmet on and he just becomes a different person, you know. So whatever you said to him before that.
It's like, you know, like the same thing, like a performer, like Beyonce, when she get that microphone. She's in another zone, right?
Right,
what I mean?
Right.
She's Sasha. She's Sasha Fierce, right? Uh-huh. Yep. So when they put on that helmet, it's a wrap.
Exactly.
When did Saquon know that it was time for him to leave college and enter the pros?
I think he didn't know that. I think, you know, I think that was a plan from the door with him. And he told us, he said, you know, I think I'm going to go out for the draft. And it's like, again, it's your decision, you know, but
yeah.
I'm like, I prefer for you to get your degree. And he's not too far from that. I think he has like two classes and he'll be done with it. But I'm like, okay, just know what you're doing. Know what you're doing. And if there's something you want to do again, we're here to support you. So I think he had that in his mind. I'm not sure how long, but you know, football been his life. So I think that was just, okay, I'm going to cut out now and
see where this road takes me. Ain't going to get paid for my hard work.
Right. I think
okay, let's get to that. Jeez, that's a whole nother episode. Pay the darn kids. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway, so coming out of the draft, he was, of course, slated to go high. And what was the draft experience like for you guys?
It was a wonderful experience. It was something that I never experienced before. But when you see these things on TV, you know what I mean? You see the draft, these kids, you know, sitting there waiting and to see, you know, where they're going to go. And then when they do, their name get called, whether they're there or they're at home or, you know, houses. It's just amazing. It's like, okay. But when you're actually there, it's a lot of work that goes into it. A lot of work.
A lot of work.
Yes, a lot of work. So I commend everybody who has a hand in that because,
it's a lot.
It is a lot.
But you know what? It's a lot. But for me, it was so important to stay in the moment. Do you know what I mean? Just kind of take it all in.
Yep.
How did it make you feel when you heard the commissioner call his name?
Oh my gosh. I think my heart dropped. I was like, you know, because you're sitting there. So you're projected to go here.
Yeah.
That does not absolutely necessarily mean you're going to go there. You know,
nobody like, knows but God and Miss Cleo.
Right.
Rest her soul, Miss Cleo.
So it's like, okay, I hope his name get called. You know, like if it don't get called, you gotta prepare yourself. Because again, if it doesn't go the way that, you know, everybody is projecting, the way they project it in their mind, they already has that set up that it's, you know, okay, I'm gonna get called 1, 2, 3. And if it doesn't, again, here you become a psychiatrist. No, you know.
Then you have to get another outfit for another day.
Right. You know, it's like, okay. Listen, I came to do this one time. I don't want to come back tomorrow.
Because I will come back here in the same outfit and y'all can talk about me.
No, how about I come in my pajamas? Sweatpants, my braids up, and a t-shirt.
And my bonnet.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I did it already. I'm not doing it again.
Okay, so the Giants drafted Saquon second overall in the 2018 NFL draft. So he goes, I mean, it's not too far, you know, from Pennsylvania to New York. What was that rookie experience like for you? I know our boys were on the same team for a couple of months because Eli was drafted number 10 overall in 2016. And by 2018, October, he was traded to New Orleans. So we did have, you know, a few games together. But what was that like for you that rookie year?
I mean, it was really different in high school. You have more of a grab on things, you know, more of a control. College was like that. It's a little more interactive and being personal with the coaches, the coaching staff. You know what I mean? I mean, it's times wherein you have the coach will call you, you know, your boy didn't do this or your boy, you know, we need to stay on him or so forth. But actually, being in the NFL, it's totally different because you really don't have no control. And the only ones you're really dealing with is the agent and the manager. If they have an agent and if they have a manager to get these answers, you know, for you. It's not like you can, well, I know in my experience, it's not like you can, you know, pick up the phone and call a coach. Whitehall, I can pick up the phone and call one of the coaches. College, I can pick up the phone and call Coach Huff and call Coach Franklin. And if I couldn't get through to none of them, I call Coach Franklin's wife for me. You know, me and her had a great relationship. You know, and she's like, I got you, Tanya. I got you. She's an excellent, excellent person. But in the NFL is really basically what you see on TV, what you hear, and then actually get the truth. You got to wait till you speak to the player, which is your child. It's more of a laid back situation because you just have to wait. The same way everybody see everything that goes on TV, that's the same way we see things if we out there, if we're looking at it on TV. And if we're out there in the field, the same way, it ain't like you can just for, like I said, my experience, because every player, parents experience different things. But for my experience with my child, I can't run downstairs and go in that locker room, or, you know what I mean? I can't. In high school, you was able to do that. In college, it's like, okay, come on, let's take you back there. And the NFL, it's a weight game. You know what I mean? We're waiting for the answers, just like everybody else that sees it, that's looking at it, or actually sitting at this, you know, in the stadium. It's a weight game. You know, you're waiting for everything. I kind of don't like that. I think that, because, and I understand, because they're considered grown men, so, you know, they're considered basically to make their own decisions, and any interaction they have is with the team and with the coaching staff and the player, and then you get all your information from the player. Do I like it? No. You know what I mean? No. I don't like the weight
game. Just a better, I would like to see a better form, like communication and integration. As far as family and as far as staff, because some players have the access, some coaches, families have the access. But before we get more into rookie year, let's go back to the draft. And I remember when Saquon got drafted, he also became a father. It was a couple of days before that.
Right.
So he's now adjusting to a new career, new fatherhood. What was some advice that you and your husband, what was some advice that you as a mother honestly gave him?
Basically, to take your time. Take your time and be patient. Learn to fact that everything just came out, like came just boom.
I know.
You know, you have to learn to incorporate them things together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I remember after he was drafted, I forgot the reporter name, who's asking him about this brand new child, and Saquon's just like, I just got drafted. Like, I have so many things coming at me. Like, let me, you know what I mean? Let me stay in this moment of like, I just went number two overall.
Right. It's one step at a time. He had his,
thank you.
He had his child. He had Jada before he got drafted. So a couple of days before. So he got to experience that emotion. Oh my gosh, see my beautiful baby girl. She came into this world. You know, I'm able to hold her. You know, he held her. He skin to skin. And that was an amazing feeling. So I experienced that. So now, oh my gosh, my name just got called. You know.
Second.
Yes. Like, let me take that in. Like, this is really all happening. So it's like, separate the two.
Yeah.
Separate the two. Yeah, I mean, incorporate it, because it's going to become part of your daily life, but also realize that it is a separation. I'm home, I'm a father, I'm with my child. When I'm at that stadium and I'm on a, you know, practice and I'm in that building, that's a whole nother ball game. And when I say incorporate it, because you now have that mindset that all these things that you looked forward to, all these things that you said to yourself, I'm going to do, I'm going to accomplish. Now you have a greater reason to make sure that comes true. You know what I mean? You fulfill that. And that's for your daughter. You know what I mean? So that's when I say incorporate the two, because you're doing it for a greater purpose.
Yeah. And your why, just expand it with the child. You know what I mean? So, but there are other kids. You have four other children, right? Shaquana, Aaliyah, Rashad, and Ali. And Saquon, how were you and your husband able to support everybody equally and evenly in this process? Because sometimes this process, some kids can feel like, well, maybe he got more than me, or maybe he got more attention than I did. But how were you guys able to manage everybody's expectations?
We didn't leave them out of nothing. Whenever we went to games, even in college, even in high school, they was at the games. They was at the games before us, because, you know, they went to the school. But when college came, if sometimes we had to take two cars up, we took two cars up. We didn't. It's like, OK, well, you have this to do. So we're going to take this one today, and we're going to take that one. I remember he had a game. I forgot where it was. And my daughter and her son's father at that time, we didn't go. Them two and the best friend flew out. You know what I mean? So it's a village. It's time. My son actually just took him and his fiance. So we everything was family oriented. It was, if it wasn't one, it was the other. If it wasn't the other, it was all of us together. It was nothing where anyone should have felt left out. You know what I mean? Because we make sure everyone was involved.
How do you think Saquon has adjusted to the business of football, right? Because when you first start playing as a kid, you're in it for the love of the game. In high school, you're in it for the love of the game. College, you see all that goes along with it, but you don't get a piece of the pie.
Right.
So now you really get to the NFL and it's a business. How did you guys prepare him for that, the business of the NFL? Because, you know, people like to say it's a brotherhood. With the teams, a brotherhood, but it's very much a business.
It is a business. It is a business. And I think that Saquon did a lot of reading. So he was aware of things and how, you know, how everything is going to go. And also he's a very good listener. So he listens, he processes it, and he's very opinionated. And he also asks a lot of questions, wherein you have a lot of people who don't. He wants to know when, where, what, why, and how. And at the end of the day, how is it going to benefit me? Not so much of like what I'm going to get out of it. No, how is it going to benefit me? I think that's how he was prepared. You know what I mean? That became the mindset that he had.
Yeah. Also advocating for yourself is very important, because I think sometimes they overplay the whole what's in the best interest of the team. And that is important. But if the best interest of the team is at your detriment, then there's a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can be that guy, but still the team is always going to do what's best for the team.
Right.
So it's very good to be able to kind of balance and see, okay, how am I growing and what is my benefit, whether it's financial, whether it's emotional, whether it's physical. Me lifting up the team, is it lifting me up or do I have to go down?
Right. Right. You can be a team player, but for so long, you know?
Yeah. And part of being a team player is also making sure you as a member of the team is valued.
Right. Right.
Let's talk about his calves, though. Everybody talks about Saquon's calves. Those things are magical. Where did they come from?
I don't know. They used to always be like, oh, well, I had big calves. You know what I mean? My husband had big calves because he always trained. And I honestly think it came from my father's side, from my father, because my father, God rest his soul, but he was a big guy. I mean, I would say we would like to take credit, a little bit of credit for it, you know, me and my husband. But I also have to put in, say, his hard work and his work ethics and working out, you know, added.
So he didn't have that calf when he was five?
He did. He was very stocky. All my boys were stocky when they was little. My mother always said that they get it from my father. So I don't know. But like I said, him working out added to it. You know, it gave it that more muscular.
People work out and they don't get that Saquon calf, Tanya. People work out and don't get that calf. That's just an anointing. That calf is anointing.
So imagine they were wrestling when he was doing wrestling. He probably somebody I wouldn't have never wanted to come up against.
Never, ever. So what now that, you know, as he's out on injury, because, you know, our sons are all about routine, right? That's one thing football does and sports give to them is that routine. So how has he adjusted to the routine of just, you know, rehabbing and not being out there?
I think he's adjusting well, because at first the thing was a little of a struggle. But once we got back from LA and he was going to the facility before we left. But once we got back from LA and he got back on that routine of going there, because he goes to the facility for his PT. So, and still being there with the team, I think it helped balance it a little better and gave him a little more of a comfort, you know, more so than not being too sure of, you know, what's going to happen, what's going to take place. But he's at the facility every day. So I think that's it's a good routine for him, and it gave him that balance to still make him feel as he's part of, you know, he's part of something.
Exactly.
You know, opposed to just being
exactly
home.
You know, and just getting ready to wrap up, I have to ask you that, you know, as Black moms, especially Black moms with sons and daughters, but, you know, you have three sons. What has been your experience and what has been your advice to your boys in staying safe as far as dealing with police, as far as just a Black man, period, from Pennsylvania to the Bronx? What have you done to really kind of keep your sons alive and thriving?
I told them you could be respectful, but if you was to get stopped by the police, you have a right to ask questions, but everything doesn't, and this is just my opinion, but everything doesn't warrant a outburst or a fight. I always tell them, you know, walk away from things to be able to fight for it for another day.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because if you're
stay alive.
Yeah. If you're not here, someone else has to pick up that fight. But it means a lot. but it won't bring my child back to me. And that's something my feelings for, you know, the mothers that lost their sons and their daughters. Whew, but I don't know if I'll be able to handle that. And I think a fight should be done while you're living. You know, everybody get credit when they're gone. How about we get some credit while we're alive? You know what I mean? So let's stay alive. Sometimes you have to walk away. Sometimes you have to be the bigger person.
You won't be that mom out there leading the protest. You'd be like, I will be on the other side. Right. I will be the, when they go low, I go lower.
Right. You know, right. I mean, like I said, all respect due to, you know, the people that's out there doing that. And I would love to be out there. You know what I mean? I support, because I agree with a lot of things. You know, I won't get into a black and a white thing, but I agree with a lot of things. But I don't want my kids, like I tell them, you have the right to ask questions. Why is you pulling me over? Why is you doing this to me? What did I do wrong? Like, what do you want? Why are you bothering me? You know what I mean? But you don't have to get agitated, because when you get agitated, be calm, because they already feel they have the upper hand. You know what I mean? And they already feel that they was given this key to do whatever they want, whenever, however, you know what I mean? And I won't say everyone is like that, but the majority rules. Just stay calm and let's fight it out while you're alive. How about we do that?
And people don't understand how much of that concern permeates, you know, the life of being black. Because I remember when Eli got his car, his first car was a little Audi, but I was always like, don't you want a Subaru? Because it's like, you don't want them in a fancy car and the cops think, oh, you're a drug dealer. That's why you have, it's amazing that how we have to be so mindful of everything.
I tell my kids, make sure you stop at the stop sign. Count to three. One, two, three. You know, you've been here long enough.
Yellow means stop.
Exactly. You know, and I tell them, like, just do those things that you need to do. Your registration, your insurance is in the glove compartment. Only thing that should be on top is that. You reach for that, you hand it to them. So let's get your ticket and let's take it up in court. How about we do that?
So now in his third season, we all know the NFL is for not for long. What are some of Saquon's plans for when football is over?
He's going to do broadcasting and communication. He wants to be like a commentator or, you know, anything with sports related. That was always a goal of his. That was his plan. He always had a backup plan. And that's why I say two classes, get that degree. But regardless, that is what his end game is.
What are you most proud of him for?
I'm just proud of him being a man that he is. You know, I'm proud of him being a man that we raised. He's very respectful. He has a lot of empathy for other people, you know, and that milks your heart when you're able to see the man that you raise. And all my boys is like that. So I really won't just single out one kid, but all my boys is like that. But it's just, I'm very proud of him. And I'm proud how everything that he's been, you know, been given to him, he's taken it very well, whether it's injury, fatherhood, getting drafted, not sure, not, you know, uncertain about if you what's going to happen in the future as far as, because of your injury. I think he's taking it very well. He's just taking it all in. He's absorbing it and making a plan, because I know him. He's making a plan in his head. He's like, okay, so definitely I know I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But for the most part, he is healing, training to get back on that field. He'll be back.
What an insightful conversation with Tanya. I really appreciate her transparency, her vulnerability, and her honesty. You know, in a season of injuries and setbacks, this episode has really been encouraging. When we do these episodes, you really don't know what you're going to get, right? I know I'm going to laugh because our guests are dynamic and I love to laugh. But today I was really encouraged when Tanya said, sometimes a setback is a setup for a greater journey. Which leads me to today's Annie's Clapback. You know, the hardest thing in life is getting your heart around a major disappointment, a major setback, discouragement. And this year, we've all experienced our share of losses, heartbreaks, and pain. And you know what? It's the hardest thing to kind of
get your foot in, when you have suffered a major setback, when you look at your life changing, when you look at your dreams being snatched away, it's so easy to lose heart. But I always say that we're not qualified by how well we win, but sometimes by how well you lose. We all would love to have a life that doesn't involve pain, but pain is very much part of our life. And I always say that God is more interested in our growth than our comfort. Yeah, we want to be comfortable. We all love a life without any heartaches, without any setbacks, without any injuries. But sometimes we have to remember that our losses are just the beginning of our greatest win, right? And the first step in an even greater journey. So you know what? Be encouraged, because today's episode definitely lifted up my spirits. Anyway, thank you all so much again for listening to Raising a Pro. Raising a Pro is part of the Audio Boom Original Network. And if you're feeling this podcast, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, follow us on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to drop me a line or suggest someone you'd like to hear on this series, find me on socials at Raising a Pro. I'll be back next week with another candid conversation with the mother of another NFL heavyweight. See you next time, family.